We're checking in on the pandemic in Waukesha County as reported cases of COVID-19 continue to rise. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. As of yesterday, there were 4,299 positive cases in the suburban Milwaukee County. Do you live in Waukesha County? What concerns you about how the virus is spreading? How do you feel about the statewide mask mandate and the approach your county is taking with it? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Paul Farrow is Waukesha County Executive. He coordinates and directs all administrative and management functions of the county, and he's a former state lawmaker. Paul, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, describe the situation that you see in Waukesha County right now amid COVID.
Well, as you said, we saw an uptick in cases in July, and we are continuing to work through the increase that we've seen. The one underlying issue that we haven't seen an increase in is hospitalizations. And I think that's when we kind of go back to the beginning in March, and they talked about flattening the curve. We knew that there was going to be eventually a time where we'll see a case increases in Waukesha County. Our focus has been within the county is making sure that our healthcare organizations, our hospitals, can maintain the services to those that need the care, especially those in the ICU or those really afflicted. And then the other thing that we've been working on, too, is the contact tracing, following up with people that are tested positive to ensure that they're following the proper guidelines to quarantine themselves to reduce that spread.
Okay, so what you're saying is the virus is spreading in Waukesha County, but hospitals are not taxed at this moment.
Correct.
What do health officials think is causing the recent uptick in cases?
When we've been looking at the numbers and working with the public health department, the main thing that we can come up with is it's summertime. People, if you look back about the middle of June, people started getting out and congregating more in a typical format than they were the first couple of months of this situation where they're really kind of hunkering down. And so we've been trying to get the message out to people to continue with the 6 feet of separation. If you can't keep 6 feet of separation, put on a mask, make sure that you're reducing that spread wherever you can and keep that separation going. And that is the message that we've continued out. We kind of knew that there was going to be an increase as everything opened up in the summer. We were looking for what that impact was going to be. It was a little bit higher than the projections that we had set in for July. But we're looking at the same thing as we get ready for school September and October. We're starting to figure in those numbers of what the projection are. We're trying to get people to realize now is the time to make decisions on how it's going to affect the fall. If your typical families are going to go out on vacation right before they go back to school, we're asking people to think about what they're doing to reduce their potential for getting the COVID virus and for spreading the virus so that we'll be prepared in the fall to have the schools open up, to give the kids the opportunity to get back into their educational programs and keep moving forward.
How do you form projections? How do you project out?
A lot of it is just trying to go through the numbers that we have right now and look at typical models that are out there for kind of disease tracking and disease information that we have. Some of it is based on earlier data that we've had for different situations like the H1N1 virus. So we can see some models that are out there. And then we look at internally, how are we seeing with the projection of the numbers that we had going from March, April, May through June? What are we seeing as there's a ramp up? And then can we predict forward on this? And that's where having good data, having consistent data from not only the state, but the hospitals is important for us to have. And as you know, about 2 weeks ago, we had a challenge with the hospitalization numbers when the information was changed in their data reporting from the CDC to the Department of Health and Human Services at the national level. So there was some fluctuation that occurred there. There's some fluctuation that occurred along at the state level as they've changed up some of the modeling that they're doing.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Holly is joining us from Waterford. Hi, Holly.
Good morning.
Hi, go ahead.
I have a question. I was diagnosed with the virus on August 1st. They were fantastic. It was in Burlington. Wisconsin. I have a question, though. I don't know when I should go back to get retested, for I do have symptoms. My chest still hurts. Everything is different every hour of the day, and it's been like 10 days since I've had it.
And, Holly, you're wondering when you should go back and get retested.
Correct. They did tell me, like, I am clear if I just have coughing. So,
yeah.
I'm in days on when I should go back. Obviously, if I have symptoms, do I go back?
Holly, thanks. Yeah, Paul, go ahead.
So, Holly, what I would say is that the best course of action for you, if it's been 10 days, is to contact your personal physician and kind of get an evaluation from them. What we look at typically right now is about a 14-day infection age or timeline that's out there. We're saying that people are clear if they're 3 days with no symptoms, no fever, or if they're tested and are 3 days free. So it'd be one of those where, again, we always recommend you follow up with your personal physician. It sounds like you still have some of the symptoms, so you'll want to make sure that those are being treated properly. Holly, I would reach out to them, find out what their recommendation is, and then follow their track as well.
Holly, thank you. Paul, when you talk with hospitals, do they have enough personal protective equipment, like the gloves and the masks, and enough of other supplies and shields?
Yeah, they are, as we said, the goal would be to have about 3 or 4 weeks worth of inventory on hand. Most of them are a couple of weeks out. We've got a few of the hospitals that are, as I say, kind of a 1 week to week type of thing where they're getting the inventory in, almost like a just-in-time situation where as they're running out, they're getting resupplied. We're starting to see an increase in the PPE availability, which has been helpful. I know as the Major General talked about, we've been working with the states to send out PPE to the first responders in the county and work with hospitals to gather that in. But that is one of the challenges that we continue to look at as we kind of prepare for what might happen in the fall. Do we have enough PPE? Do we have enough testing and reagent that will be able to maintain the levels that we're looking for?
So you mentioned schools earlier. How are you working with your schools ahead of fall? What is the situation for opening?
Yeah, we have been in contact with the majority of the school districts in Waukesha County for the last 6.5 weeks. We've been working with them on a weekly basis to kind of formulate the plans. You know, and as you know, with nothing coming from the states, it's kind of on the school districts themselves to create the plan that they feel is going to be most effective for their students. What we're doing from the county perspective is providing that support network. So we're still working on, in fact, right as I speak, we're talking about a new contact tracing program that we're developing with the schools so we can regionalize kind of a response team for this 2 or 3 school districts. We'll have one team that's going to be working with them throughout the year. And then the other thing that we're looking at, too, is our data. We're probably going to be changing up our information on our dashboard to help the schools see what's going on within their districts in regards to the spread of the virus and other information that we can provide.
Oh, so it would be pulled apart a little more specific for the district itself?
Correct.
Yeah. Carry on. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so we're really trying to work with them. When you talk to the majority of the superintendents and the feedback they're getting, there is a lot of anxiety, as we know, about bringing the kids back to school. There are a lot of people that prefer having them in school. They think that's the best way to do it if we can provide a safe environment.
We're talking
with we're working with.
We're talking with Paul Farrow, Waukesha County Executive, looking at the virus spread in the suburbs of Milwaukee. And you can join in. Do you live in Waukesha County? How do you feel about the spike in cases? Does it concern you? And parents, do you have kids that attend school in the county? What are your thoughts on the initiative to open? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Paul, as you work on the contact tracing element and the regional response effort to it, help us understand who is staffing this and what are the goals and priorities in a regional approach to contact tracing?
Yeah, well, Kate, it's still almost countywide that the approach is when it comes to the contact tracing. Each health department kind of has their own contact tracing organization. As you know, Milwaukee County is unique to most of the state. They have, I believe, 19 public health officials. It's almost by municipality rather than as Waukesha County is. We have one public health officer for the entire county. So our contact tracing, when you think about a typical year, let's go back to 2019, we have less than 15 individuals that work in the contact tracing area of public health, the nurses and that do disease investigation, do the follow-up calls. We are well over 100 employees that we now have that are doing the contact tracing. In fact, right now, ramping up, we have 30 employees that are going through disease investigation and contact tracing training to be ready to go next week. And so that was a part of an agreement that we signed with Carroll University. It's a great partnership that we've developed. They do the virtual training for us for contact tracing and disease investigation. It's two different levels. If you think about it, the disease investigator is your first call. When we get a positive result from a test, they contact that individual to start getting the background information, kind of like the major general is saying, finding out where they've been, who they may have been in contact. Then they hand that information off to our contact tracers, who then follow up with those people that have been around a test positive, saying, here's what you need to do. You need to watch for any type of symptoms, get tested, but here's the procedure that you should be looking at as we're working forward on this.
So how has Carroll University approached the pandemic, and how are you working with a university in your county?
Yeah, Carroll has kind of done the same thing. They're looking at how do they provide in-person education for their students. I know they've made decisions where, like, the dorm rooms are down to single-person dorms instead of shared or quads. In fact, they are working with a local hotel to provide more rooms for the students throughout the year. And I think they've really taken that approach of how do we still bring the kids back onto the campus, but provide that level of safety. And then when you look at the partnership we have with them, I think it's a great opportunity. We'll have students that are going through some of their health programs at the university who will be working with us here at public health. So they'll be getting some real-time experience, and some experience that most people don't realize is so needed in the world, in the counties in the region, in public health. You know, we don't just supply contact tracing. We are there as a clinic for individuals that don't have a physician or in the poverty level that need that specific care and that special care to help out. We provide all of those different areas within public health. And so they're getting an opportunity to see how all that works out as well.
Paul Farrow is Waukesha County Executive, learning about how his community is addressing a surge in cases. What do you think we can do to stop the spread of the coronavirus? Is it masks? Is it restrictions on businesses? What is your county seeing as far as spread? We're at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation now with Waukesha County Executive Paul Farrow. We're hearing about how his county is handling a recent influx of positive coronavirus cases, how it's ramping up contact tracing in the suburbs of Milwaukee. Paul, let's look at the issue of masks. You've decided that Waukesha County will not enforce the statewide mandate to wear masks. What can you tell us there?
Well, when you think about it, Kate, there's two components to that. There was, when the governor instituted the mask mandates on August 1st, we had been spending probably 2 weeks prior getting people, or 3 weeks prior, getting people to realize the importance of masks. And the one thing I kept telling everyone is when it comes to mandating a mask from a state or a county level, what is the enforcement vehicle that we are going to use? Typically, it's law enforcement. And in that situation, do we want to pull law enforcement away from what their main purpose is providing public safety to go out and enforce people wearing a mask? Or do we use an educational system? Do we get people to realize the personal responsibility, the ability that we have to work with one another and respect one another, to wear masks when we can't have that 6 feet of separation? And that's what we're working through. And I think the key that people have to understand is when you look at the spread of the virus, separation is the most important thing. When we've talked about this from the beginning, we've talked about keeping the vulnerable populations separated so that they don't contract the disease as readily as if they're just out in the general public. If you get sick and you are tested positive or you feel you're symptomatic, you should quarantine yourself, contact your personal physician, but again, take steps to separate yourself from others so that you don't have the spread.
So even if masks could save lives, you're saying it really comes down to a personal decision and making good choices about, you know, distancing and so forth.
Well, what I'm saying is, again, it's separation. Yes, we still have to make those decisions. But we were talking about 6 feet of separation and working through 6 feet of separation. The governor for a number of weeks said, I'm never going to put one in. For whatever reason, I'm not going to put it in. And then arbitrarily decides to put it in without having a system that he can truly enforce what he's doing. And when you look at the majority of the counties throughout Wisconsin, the sheriffs and the sheriff here came out and made the same statement that they're not going to enforce the mandate by going out and arresting people. And as you know, the sheriff is a duly elected position. He and I had a conversation and talked, but it's his decision on if he was going to enforce it or not. My point was, why do we put a mandate in place when we have businesses that are already starting to put situations in? When you look at the retail world, they can set up in the markets that we work in how they want their businesses to interact. Private businesses were doing the same thing. When you look at the majority of businesses in Waukesha County, most of them had a mask requirement for their employees depending on different areas. But to arbitrarily come in and say, anytime you're indoor in a public space, you have to have a mask on, causes some challenges. You know, when we look at the county building and the operations that we have here, we had already put in a number of restrictions and a number of changes physically to barriers between the public and our employees to provide them still perfect interaction with the employees, but keeping them safe. And so all of that was kind of thrown out the window because the mandate came in and said, you must do this, not taking into account all the things that companies that have already been put into place, businesses that have already been put into place to help alleviate this. You know, and I think when I look at the whole situation and what we're working through in the county is we've kind of gone backwards in how this was approached from March. When you think about the majority of situations that occur, we have a ramped up approach.
But do you see masks when you go out around Waukesha County?
Yes, all the time. I would say the majority of the public in Waukesha County are using masks.
You know, and it's not due to the mandate?
No, I don't believe it's due to the mandate. I think it was people that were doing it beforehand. I think there are some people that are looking at, okay, well, there is a mandate that's in place, so I'll wear the masks. But I don't believe we'll ever achieve the 95% across the entire state the governor was looking for as a mandate requirement.
Well, let's take a call. Now, Jean is joining us from Madison. Hi, Jean.
Good morning. This is a great show. Mr. Farrell, very interesting discussion this morning. But I do have a few questions that have been weighing on my mind. We have regulations that require restaurants to be inspected. And there's a reason for that. I mean, we would like to assume that every restaurant owner is very careful and pays attention to proper temperatures and dishwashing and temperatures and cooking. But we have decided that it's very important to have some oversight of that process to protect public health, even though we all know 99% of restaurant owners are good citizens and care very deeply. We also have rules on our highways about speeding. Most citizens don't speed, but there are some people who speed. Therefore, we have sheriffs, state patrol officers who try to protect people from their own foolish choices. I think that we could put public health around the virus in this same category. Most people exercise personal responsibility and care. But there are some people who don't, and they put everyone else at risk. So I'm curious why we should have some requirements for restaurants and speeding that we don't have for a pandemic that is deadly.
Gene, thank you. Paul?
Well, Gene, I appreciate the call, and I guess I'll put it kind of two ways to you. One, when you look at the rules that are usually set forth for the public health for restaurants, when it comes to hygiene, when it comes to care, there is a system that is in place, if it's at the state level or at the county level, for ordinance to pass through the legislative body, our county supervisors, and then myself to sign it in the ordinance into action. Same at the state level. The problem with this mandate that the governor has is when you look at the reasoning behind it, there isn't the true science as to why we're doing this. And I know that everybody says, and we hear it, and there's arguments on both sides, masks do work. And I agree with that. But the challenge comes into when you put a rule into place, usually you look at how are you going to enforce it.
I don't understand when you say true science. What do you mean by that?
If you look at the executive order in which the governor put forth, one of the reasons that he was saying that we were requiring masks is because there was an uptick in hospitalization rates, but left no information on what that uptick was. When you look at what's happening in HERC 7, which is part of the region that has been most affected by Wisconsin, which is the southeast region, the increase since the mask mandate a week before it went into place has been lower than it was peak out, I believe it was back in May. And so we're not seeing the uptick that I would say is an area that we have a grave situation that we have to move something forward on. When you look at one of the other areas that the governor talked about was the fatalities, trying to reduce the low number of fatalities. The number that he put into his emergency order is at a level that is almost twice what we have seen throughout this entire pandemic. And so looking at data that we're trying to come up with is we're looking at what we do at the county. The last thing I want to do is increase the level of anxiety people are having, saying that we need to reduce a spread of a virus without having actual information that I can say, let me show you what's happening. Here's what's going on right now.
Very quickly, before time runs out here, do you anticipate the National Guard will stand up more testing sites? What is the status of community testing in your county?
Well, we have a testing site going on today with the National Guard, and we are super appreciative when they come out and help us. I know we have another one that we're looking at. And as the Major General said, we're also working through with Election Day. We have a number of the Guards members here in the county that are helping out with that. My understanding is the state is the one that kind of initiates where the testing is and limits the number of test kits that are available at each location. And I believe beginning in the middle of September, they are standing down from 40 teams to 11 teams to do the testing throughout the state. So I think there's going to be a challenge there as we see, and as the Major General said, we're seeing a reduction in the test kits availability at the private level, which is what we've been working with here in the county. So that's going to be a challenge as we move forward.
Paul, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Paul Farrow is Waukesha County Executive. Just ahead, we discuss the medical ethics of vaccines with the Director of the Global Health Program at the Council on Foreign Relations. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.